court will proceed to the fourth case of the day, Pilar versus International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Ms. Reeves.
May it please the court.
Why don't you hold on for a couple minutes here.
May it please the court. My name is Marlita Greve. I'm here on behalf of James Pilar, who is the appellant. We are appealing Judge Michael Mims' decision granting summary judgment to the local union. We believe that the lower court erred because it required a double burden on Mr. Pilar when it granted summary judgment. The first element of Mr. Pilar's claim against the union under Section 1981 is he had to prove that ComEd, the company he worked for, violated the collective bargaining agreement. We believe what Judge Mim did in his decision was to put a double burden on Mr. Pilar by requiring that he not only establish that he was fired, but that he was fired because of his race. And he doesn't have to prove that in this case with the union. All he had to show is that he was not fired for proper cause. Proper cause is a fact-by-fact or case-by-case issue. And so the real focus here is, based on the facts of this case and Mr. Pilar's long history with this company, was his firing because he did not submit a proof of disability form and or the Family Medical Leave Act form, was that proper cause for his termination? We submit that based on this entire history of this plant, that it was not proper cause. First of all, there was a pattern at this
point. How many opportunities did they give him to comply?
I don't believe they gave him any opportunities with respect to the proof of disability form under the MBA, the Mutual Benefit Association. They did give him one opportunity to submit a Family Medical Leave Act form. And that
How many absences did he have, please?
He went off work either October 20th or 21st. There's a little bit of dispute about the day. October 20th or 21st of 1999. He was still off work in March of 2000 when he received a letter stating, give us a Family Medical Leave Act form.
But then they give him opportunities during that period of time to comply and send him other forms?
I don't believe there's any evidence that they gave him the opportunity to send in any other forms. In fact, he asked several times why he was not getting a proof of disability form, and that's a key point I think that the lower court missed. Mr. Pilar,
wasn't Pilar told that if he could have his absences excused possibly, and be paid disability if he did file a proof of a disability form?
That's what he understood.
Completed by his doctor.
Right, but he never received the form, and see that was the key. The form was.
Did he ever call up to ask why he didn't receive it?
He called and asked Mr. Simpson. We don't have any record evidence as far as what Mr. Simpson said in response. The only record evidence we have, Your Honor, I believe, is at Defendant's Exhibit HH. There's a 3-page handwritten document by Mr. Pilar.
I thought Mr. Pilar only authorized Dr. Narayan to submit limited information.
He authorized Dr. Narayan to submit a medical summary, which Dr. Narayan did. Dr. Narayan then also, on 3 separate occasions, called and talked with Dr. Tudor, who was ComEd's doctor at the time. And the one lengthy conversation in January of 2000, Dr. Narayan provided Dr. Tudor with a pretty long history. In fact, he gave him a diagnosis, a history of how Mr. Pilar was behaving, what it was causing, the types of things it was affecting, and in fact said that he's not safe to be at a nuclear plant. He has homicidal and suicidal ideations.
Is that why? That's what I'm leading up to. Is this man incapable because of his mental problem of working at that plant?
I think he was at that time, and certainly would have been for a period of time after that. He did have a separate case that was settled, and in that case he gave up right to reinstatement.
But didn't a doctor find that he was able to return to work, and he didn't return?
Dr. Tudor, in November of 1999, which is before Dr. Narayan has a telephone conversation with him, Dr. Tudor, the company doctor, did find that Mr. Pillar could return to work. Mr. Pillar then went back to the plant as instructed by a letter, and I might be a little off on my dates, but I believe it was around November 12th. He didn't get into the plant because it's a nuclear facility. There's certain places, but he met at the training center with the HR director, Mr. Simpson. And at that point, it was decided that he would stay off work until November 19th. And I'm not sure if he took work or took vacation days and comp time, but anyway, he was allowed to be off work until the 19th. Again, he comes back to report to work, and at that point, he's telling them he's not feeling well again. On December 6th, okay, on November, at the end of November, he takes his work comp, or excuse me, these vacation days and this sick time. He's to come back to work on November 6th, which is the following Monday. On that day, he goes to another he goes to a doctor, and he can't go back to work. He's ill. So another man that
mentally ill.
Yes.
I see. Okay.
Yes. Depressed, angry, frustrated. You know, this man had been there 18 years, and there's a long history of hostile work environment based on his race. He felt that in October, when he had a meeting with his supervisor, it was a snapping point for him, and that sent him into this tumble downward. But in early December of 1999, a fellow employee of his takes in a doctor's note for him saying that he cannot be at work. That's when he starts treating with Dr. Narayan, who's a psychiatrist. Dr. Narayan's records show that between December and March 17th, Dr. Narayan had three separate phone calls with Dr. Tudor, who's the company doctor, and in addition sent in records showing a legitimate medical reason as to why this man could not be at this plant at that time. But the key, I think, Your Honors, is Mr. Pillar never received this proof of disability form in the mail, never got it sent to him. And the pattern had long been at this company that if anyone was off work for 3 days or more, they automatically from the OHS, their occupational department, got sent this form. He never received it. And he questioned why he didn't receive it, both to his union steward, Mr. Jordan, and to Mr. Simpson, the HR person, but he never got a response. Now, should he have done more? Probably. But at the time, the pattern for the company was they automatically sent it. And in his mind, he's feeling more and more discrimination at this point. So in March, the very first part of March, March 6th, I believe, he received a certified letter again saying, here's a Family Medical Leave Act form. Fill it out or you're going to be terminated. Well, he's completely confused at this point because at this company, Family Medical Leave Act typically had been used not for the employee himself or herself, but for a family member. Because these employees had paid into this disability policy, and so if they themselves were ill, they were entitled to this paid time off. Family Medical Leave Act, on the other hand, they used for mothers, fathers, children, and so forth. So he thought he had no idea what they were doing at this point. And he doesn't do nothing at this point. What he does is he calls again, tries to get hold of his union steward. He calls several times again to the HR department, Mr. Simpson, who does not return his calls or does not take his phone calls. He then has Dr. Narayan, his psychiatrist, call Dr. Tudor, the company doctor, on March 17th and talk to him again. And the next thing he knows, he's fired. And I think what the lower court did is it didn't recognize that the pattern and practice at this company had been to treat employees differently when they were ill. Mr. Pillar was being treated entirely different than anyone, white, black, red, or green. He was treated differently.
Is it because he had a different type problem?
I don't believe so.
One diabetes and the other depression.
I don't believe so because there were several other white women who had filed sexual harassment complaints around this time or a little bit before. And they had all gone off work based on the same types of mental illnesses, depression and so forth, based on the sexual harassment.
Do you mean they turned those files over to you so that you could determine that?
We have in the record information that these women went off work based on mental illness problems, depression problems, and they received proof of disability forms in the mail automatically, did not have to request them. So I don't think the fact that Mr. Pillar was suffering from recognized depression and mental illness problem at the time had anything to do with him receiving or not receiving a proof of disability form. We believe what the lower court did was not consider that evidence, not consider that based on a whole and looking at this company, that this man did not get the same treatment as everyone else. And so our proper cause or just cause standard is not an elevated standard of determining was he fired because of his race. It is rather, was he fired without proper cause, which is more of an equitable standard. And we believe that he was not.
But you have to prove, though, that the union didn't grieve this thing for some reason other than that they thought it didn't have any merit.
Absolutely. We have to prove that there is some type of racial animosity there, and we believe that based on the evidence, the union steward that he was working with, Del Jordan, had a long history of using the N-word, other horrible racial slurs. There was horrible racial graffiti at this plant, and we believe that Del Jordan had his hands all through this. He refused to provide the right medical information to Dean Apple, the business representative, who clearly testified that he relied on Mr. Jordan when he determined whether or not to take that step further. And there's certainly, we believe, a question of fact there, whether that's because of race. At least that should have been considered. The lower court didn't get to that issue.
What happened to his suit with the union?
With the company or with the union?
With the union, Local 15.
This is Mr. Pillar's suit with the union.
This
is Mr. Pillar's suit against
the... The company was settled, wasn't it?
Yes, the suit against the company, a race case, was settled, yes. I believe
that
my time
settled.
Is up.
All right. And the union, did the union give any other answer?
No, I don't believe in that case it got to that point. It was settled long before it got through much litigation.
They turned him down because they said that he didn't have adequate medical information.
Exactly. And we believe that he did. He submitted, he had all the actual medical information necessary.
Right.
I believe my time is up. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Grieve. Ms. Barker?
May it please the court, I am Sally Barker. We represent the Appalachian International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 15.
Let me ask you this on that last point. In a case where there's a settlement with the company, what are the potential damages in a failure to represent case if in the settlement with the company you waive, the other side waive reinstatement?
Well, that's a good point, Your Honor. We didn't have to get to this, but there is an offset from the settlement with the company that we believe, even if the union was liable for anything, would preclude any back pay or lost wages.
I mean, that's the usual result of a successful grievance is that you get reinstated or put back in the position that you would be,
right,
but for the companies violating the collective bargaining agreement. Here, if there's a settlement with the company, as there currently was, where there was a waiver of reinstatement, everybody went their separate ways. I'm wondering where this case would ever go if there was a reversal here and after that.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mr. Pillar stated definitely in his deposition he was not seeking reinstatement, and he had waived reinstatement in his settlement with the company. All that would be left are damages. The settlement agreement with the company is in the record, and we believe there would have been no back pay had he been able to establish liability against the union, because the amount he received in settlement would have to be an offset. There could be a potential of emotional distress damages, but we strongly believe there's no basis for liability, but the settlement with the company would have been a factor had we gone to trial. Mr. Pillar concedes that...
Why weren't these suits joined?
Mr. Pillar did not sue the union initially. Mr. Pillar only sued the company, and as sort of an afterthought from our perspective, almost 2 years after the fact that he sued the union. As a matter of fact, a great part of his case was dismissed by Judge Mim because it was out of time. The hostile environment allegations that Ms. Grieve mentioned are not part of the suit because they all occurred before the 2 year statute of limitations. Mr. Pilar was fired on March 27th, 2000. He did not sue the union until February of 2002. Mr. Pilar concedes that he has the burden under the Green Slate case of a threshold burden of proving that his discharge lacked a proper cause. Mr. Pilar significantly has not disputed the truth or the materiality of the following facts concerning his discharge. The triggering event for his discharge was his refusal to comply with the company's written directive to submit a family medical leave health care provider certification of the reason he had been absent for 5 months. His absence began in October when he stormed out of a meeting with his supervisor who was counseling him on his absence. And never during that entire period from October 20th, 1999 to March 27, 2000 did he submit a written statement from his health care provider stating the reasons why he could not work. He submitted doctor's slips saying he should be off work. One of his psychologist's slips actually stated affirmatively to the company, Dr. Kress, said he's functioning adequately. Shortly after the inception of this absence, he was seen by the company's doctor, Dr. Tudor. Dr. Tudor, who had seen Mr. Pilar on past occasions, determined Mr. Pilar was fit to work and told him to go back to work, a directive he did not follow. The company then started trying to contact him when he didn't report back at the time he was supposed to, saying, "Where are you? Why aren't you working?" Two meetings were held in November, and let me correct the record. Ms. Grieve said that the examination by Mr. Tudor was in November. It was not. It was October 26, 1999, and Dr. Tudor told him to go back to work the next day. He didn't. The company met with him on November 12th, said what's going on. He asked them to explore with Dr. Tudor if he would reassess his conclusion. The company manager did so. The company managed, the medical department said, "No, we're standing on our assessment." Once again, Mr. Pilar was told to return to work. Once again, on December 6th, he did not. He simply submitted a doctor's slip that did not explain his condition. And from then on, there was a period of time he wouldn't even release any medical records. Finally, 5 months later, the company gave him one last opportunity to submit the requisite written certification of why he could not work. They did it in the form of a Family Medical Leave Act form. I respectfully disagree with Ms. Grieve that there is no evidence in the record whatsoever that that kind of Family Medical Leave Act is only used for family illness. If you look at the proof of disability form itself, which is in the record, it states, "This form shall serve as an application for Family Medical Leave Act." The two forms are really interchangeable. They ask for the same information. Mr. Pilar only belatedly claimed he didn't receive a proof of disability form in his deposition. He did not say that was the reason his discharge was unfair. That testimony only surfaced in an affidavit in opposition to our motion for summary judgment. We think it's inconsistent with his deposition testimony and under Seventh Circuit law should be disregarded. But even so, even if he didn't receive such a form, as the district court clearly pointed out, he was given a written directive. March 3, letter, Mr. Pillar, we are asking you to provide this health care certification of why you can't work, and warned him, his failure to do so would result in his absence being treated unexcused. Mr. Pillar is a trained electrician, a smart individual. If he could not understand that letter, it is difficult to accept. He did not say in his deposition he did not understand that letter. What he said was he wanted paid leave. He wanted MBA leave. That was his quarrel. He was upset that he, unlike others, had been approved for paid leave. The distinction there is that the company doctor, Dr. Tudor, had examined him and found he wasn't unfit to work. The same medical department found not only the white women Ms. Grieve mentioned agreed that they did have a mental illness, but really fatal to Mr. Pillar's claim, and what Ms. Grieve did not mention, is that Dr. Tudor and Commonwealth Edison found Ricky Dunbar, African-American, who also claimed a mental disability, but was examined and provided satisfactory proof of his illness, they approved his illness. They're simply, Mr. Pillar did not comply with the company's directive. The district court correctly found the basic principle of obey now, grieve later, was not followed by Mr. Pillar, and he has not remotely demonstrated that proper cause was wanting from his discharge. I just briefly address the remaining issue, which we believe the court will not have to reach, and that is whether there was any proof of animus, racial animus by the union. Ms. Grieve did not point out that there were five discharges in the two-year period leading up to Mr. Pillar's discharge. Of the five, two were African American, three were white. The union on the merits only pursued the grievance of African American Larry Martin, decided not to pursue both Mr. Pillar's grievance and the three white individuals' grievances because they determined it was lack of merit. The union decision maker is not Mr. Jordan, and Mr. Jordan's regrettable remarks, if in fact he made them, were no more than stray remarks, which this court has repeatedly said do not preclude summary judgment. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Barker. Ms. Grieve, your time has expired, but you may have 1 minute.
Just briefly, I think the issue here is at the family medical leave request in March of 2000. At that point, Mr. Pillar testified he was frustrated and he was confused because no one else had received the same type of form. And so he, rather than ignoring it, he did what he thought he had to do. He called the company and he called his union steward, neither of which would respond to him. He called his doctor. His doctor provided that information. So in effect, what the court did and what the defendant is wanting us to do is elevate form over substance because he had given what the information needed. He gave it to the company. And we would respectfully ask that you reverse the summary judgment ruling and send this case back to trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grieve. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the fifth case.